Hey, everybody, welcome back to our KWTO Honor Flight Zimmer Radiothon. We have a very special guest in studio now because not only do you know him from our sister station, The Jock, but he is a local broadcast legend. And now Don and I have the opportunity to sit down with him today to talk about his experience with the Honor Flight. Ned, thank you so much for joining us today.
That's very nice of you to say. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it really is an honor for me to get to interview you because I grew up watching you on my television screen from the time I could not even know what television was. And so this is a really cool experience. Ned, start off by telling us which branch you served in, where, and when.
I'm United States Navy, and I served from 1962 to 1968. It was a six-year hitch in the regular Navy, and I was a U.S. Navy corpsman. That's a member of the hospital corps. That's the medics. And I found my hitch while it was all domestic, and I never set foot on a ship a sailor. Now, I did in training and so forth and so on. But I was the hospital corps is basically land-based, and I was an operating room technician. That was my key.
Did you have medical experience before that, or did you get thrown into
very,
that?
Very, very slight. Very slight medical experience. That's how I got thrown in, because when I joined, my objective, personal objective, was to be a part of Armed Forces Radio. That was my career. It's what I'd gone to college for and what I was aiming my goals in life. So I thought that's what I was going to do. But no, that's not how that's not how it happened at all. I remember getting my orders the first time and say, what is this? Hospital Corps? Oh, my goodness sake. Anyway, I found that to be a tremendously rewarding experience.
So you did not get to do Armed Forces Radio?
I did
at
not.
Any point
then.
And did you choose to enlist, or were you drafted?
No. Drafting is only for the U.S. Army, unless you're in wartime, and then the other branches can draft you.
Right.
No, I enlisted, and I enlisted in the Navy because I had a bit of Navy background in our family. My younger brother's a naval officer. I didn't want to be an officer with him. No.
No sibling competition there.
So, no. I went in enlisted mainly because of the radio possibilities. The enlisted guys are the ones who are on the air, and they're the ones who do the work, but didn't work out that way.
So it always started out as a way to further your radio career. Why else did you decide to join the service? There are a lot of pathways to have a successful broadcasting career. Why did you choose this one?
That is an extremely good question, and one that does hit home. When I finished in college, I was kind of spinning my wheels. As anybody knows, in this profession, you are not being caught. Oh, look, let's go get him. He's in a no. You go out and seek the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And jobs in this business back at that time in 1962 were really hard to get. So I was kind of wandering along, and my dad, great influence in my life, sat down and with me and said, don't you think it's about time that you decided to give back now? You have taken everything up until now, as anyone your age would. I wasn't yet 21. Don't you think you should give back? And he was right, absolutely right, but I knew it all along, of course. You have that duty to serve your country. Didn't want to be drafted. So I enlisted, and that was the key. I remember him telling me that one day, and then the next day I drove down to the enlistment office and enlisted in the U.S. Navy, and then went in early October of 1962. So it was the influence, the family influence, of hitting on me psychologically of what my duty as a citizen was and still is, for that matter, and that's to give back, give to the betterment of all concerned.
And what was happening on the world stage when you were in
When I was in Navy boot camp, all of a sudden, we were mandated, told, no talking. Now, of course, there's always no talking in boot camp anyway, but this was no communications with anyone.
Wow.
What on earth is going on? Well, it was the Cuban Missile Blockade.
Oh.
It was going on while we were in boot camp, and we didn't find out about it until about, maybe 3 or 4 weeks after it had happened. It was a really, really tenuous part in our relationship with what was then called the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that was the major point of any contention in this country was that with Russia. Vietnam developed a little bit later on.
So how did that affect your time in the service?
Well, it did and it didn't, because I was an operating room technician, and much of what we did was to older vets, people who had served in Korea and in World War II and so forth. Much of the surgical procedures we were doing, and civilians as well, because you deal with Navy dependents where I was. But then all of a sudden, strangely enough, some of the surgical procedures were to remove shrapnel and bullets from young kids. What is this? What's going on? And they would tell us, hey, there's this little action heating up over in what was used to be called French Indochina, but had later developed into Vietnam. And our troops were over there. It never really exploded in full force until after my hitch had ended. My hitch is ending in 1968. But it did have an influence in many respects.
And how has that affected you in your life for years to come, seeing such horrifying things at a young age? And you owe a lot of your experience in the Navy to your success in your broadcasting career.
To some extent, yes. But in terms of being able to handle emergencies and things like that, that's what you do. Some of these kids, and they were Marines for the most part, who came in, shot up. My goodness sake, I never thought I would see anything like that. The Navy corpsmen are also the Marine medics. The Marine Corps is part of the U.S. Navy, and these individuals are called Fleet Marines. And I did serve 2 weeks as a Fleet Marine, but it wasn't going to be for me. That's EMT work, and I was a surgical tech. Anyway, over and above all of that, to see these kids who were badly maimed, and I don't mean permanently, because that's what we tried to correct in surgical procedures. That was a sobering experience, to say the very least. And yeah, it affects me to this day, some of the things that you did see.
And that leads us to why we're here today. I want Don to take over now and ask you a little bit about the Honor Flight experience, and how all of what you've just told us creates this environment where now you get to go on this honor flight and you get to remember the people that you helped save, probably for the most part. I can imagine that you would be good at your job in anything. And so you got to, were you a guardian, or were you a participant?
That's a very good question, Cass, a very good question, because I am on the honor flight board. When some of my board peers said, why don't you go on the flight rentals? You haven't been on any of them. I said, sure. I go as a guardian. No, we want you to go as a vet.
Wow.
And I said, why? Well, because you are a vet. You're a Navy vet, and you were in during the Vietnam era, is what we will call
right.
it. So, yeah, you should go as a vet and see the Vietnam War. I said, look, gang, I am from that part of the country. I have been and seen the memorials in the past. Let somebody else go. I can go as a guardian. I can show them around. No, I want you to go as a vet. That would have been, had I not reversed it and gone as a vet, would have been the biggest mistake I had ever made. When I got there, and keep in mind, I've seen the memorials other than the Vietnam War.
Right.
I had never had the opportunity to sit there and read the names. And when I saw that, I remembered that I had a number of Fleet Marine buddies, that's what the Navy corpsmen are called, Fleet Marines, who had decided to undertake those missions. And I found 6 of my buddies' names on that wall. You don't think that was a sobering experience, gang? That really was. To see those guys who I had served with in other Navy duties, and then see their names up there as having given their lives in Vietnam as members of the Fleet Marines, that was tough. That was tough for me to handle.
But you're glad you went. You're glad you did it. It probably meant a lot to you, didn't it?
I will go again. In any capacity, I will go again. It had that much of an effect on me. And over and above all of that, Don, there are circumstances in which, you can make trips. For instance, my high school trip. We're in the Washington, D.C. area, what, a couple hundred miles away, so... Mm-hmm. We went there as seniors, and that was basically to fool around and just have fun and so forth.
Right.
The impact of seeing these memorials with my peers absolutely cannot be topped. Other individuals, I didn't know any of the others, were people from the Army, from the Air Force. There were a few Navy vets on there, too. To see their reactions to the World War II, to the Marine Corps memorial, to the statue of the heroes on Mount Suribachi, hoisting the flag. When you see that in person, it's an altogether different circumstance. And then to top it all, to see the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, that is...
I've seen that. It's
that is impactful. What's known in today's vernacular as heavy.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's one of the later things you do in the day, right?
It's toward the end. Toward the end, in fact, it precedes the dining hour, and everybody gets fed, of course, on these trips. That's what makes it so valuable for those who are listening in. Need your help. Really need your help more than anything else. These trips are not for free, folks. Mm-hmm. The veterans do fly for free. That's the gift that we can give. Flying them for free, giving them the opportunity to see these memorials, giving them a good time. It's a long day. It's 5 a.m. to almost 10 p.m. at night. It's all done in one day. But it doesn't come cheaply. Each flight, and there are three of them that we have here in the Ozarks, Honor Flight of the Ozarks has flights in May, August, and October. Each of those flights cost $72,000. That is the flight itself. There are other costs far beyond that that makes it very expensive procedures. So that's where the public comes in to help. Now, yes, the guardians do have to pay a fee. They pay $500. But that's for the honor of being a guardian. And that only covers just a fraction of the expense cost factor. It is you folks who make it worthwhile, and that's why we are asking you, urging you to be a part of this radiothon.
And Ned, when you give to Honor Flight of the Ozarks, you know exactly where your money is going. Your money is going to send a veteran to Washington. I mean, there's no other way.
There is none.
You know exactly where it's going.
I can assure you the board members aren't getting paid.
No.
That's a total volunteer process. No, it is all going to the veterans who are on their way to Washington, D.C., and to have an important part of their lives not just relived, but to be celebrated, because the effort coming home by family and friends and the bands out of the airport playing when they come in, let me tell you, that didn't happen when I got out. Now, I wasn't a victim of any abuse or anything like that, like people throwing things at me.
But it meant a lot to you, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it did. It absolutely did. I couldn't ask for anything more.
And for those wondering, even though you didn't get on Armed Forces Radio, right after you got through with your service, you started the KY3, didn't you?
Well, it was actually during.
During, okay, yeah.
When I was told that my active duty had ended, which was October of 1966, the folks with the where I mustered out in Philadelphia said, okay, look, we're going to do something a little different with you. We're going to extend your active duty by a few months. There's this little deal going on in Southeast Asia that is heating up. I said, is that the Vietnam? And I'm, yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to extend. What we want you to do, you're free. Go do whatever you want in civilian life. But we want you to call each month into wherever the particular establishment, military, hopefully Navy establishment is. Well, for the first couple of months when I got out, I'm spinning my wheels and not getting any job at all. Worked for the Postal Department in my hometown. So I called Philly every month. And then, I guess 2 months after that, in January, I picked up stakes and said, I'm spinning my wheels here. I'm not going anywhere. That's when I came out to Missouri and was with a family relative for about a week up in Kansas City while I hunted around. And that's where I got the job at KY3. When I got down here, that rule still existed. Made contact with the Navy folks over at the Navy Reserve Center each month. And then came the note that said, I don't believe we need you anymore. Go about whatever you're doing.
And that career, all the rest is history, we shall say,
it
right?
Is, yes.
Ned, God bless, and thank you for your service, and thank you for being such an important part of Honor Flight.
That's very nice of you to say. And, folks, please, we urge you all. I know times are tough. Believe me, all of us here know that. Reach down deep in your heart and in your pocketbook, and do help the Honor Flight. We need you as the lifeblood.
Well said. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ned.